One of the most important aspects of our relationship with God is prayer. You know, we're supposed to talk to God all the time. We have different kinds of prayer. We have formal prayer where we get down on our hands and knees, praying to Him, asking for whether it's prayer requests, asking for Him to healing, or whether help with our day or guide us in something. Then there's times where we just go out our day normally, the normal stuff that we have, our normal activities, just talking to God. Talking to Him like a friend walking there with us. Yet, daily prayer is a struggle for many people. It's a struggle for many people. And none of us like to admit it because it is such an intricate part of our relationship with God and our relationship with Him. But the reality is, it can be a struggle. It can be difficult. You know, our prayers are supposed to be daily. We're supposed to approach Him every single day. But sometimes we get to the end of our day. If you're like me, occasionally you're laying in bed thinking, man, I didn't pray today. And so you do that last minute prayer where you're trying to get the prayer in, and next thing you know, you're dozing in and out. You don't finish the prayer, and next thing you know, you wake up. And you go, oh man. It's amazing how the mind works, right? Instantly it's gone. There's other times where we plan up getting up early. Yet we don't get up early enough. We throw in the 1, 2, or 3 minute prayer that we have time for so that we're not late getting to work or wherever we're going. And we just cram it in and try to get it. That's the reality of what we're in. Sometimes we rush through our lives and we just fill it in. We just get it in because we know deep down that it's such an important part of our relationship with God and what we want to have with Him and how we approach Him and how we go about our day. Well, what we end up finding out is when we go through our day and realize we haven't had that connection with God, most of the times our day doesn't go very well. It doesn't result as positive as it could, with all the blessings that it could. Prayer is a major point in our lives, but it's often a major struggle for many Christians. I've heard many times from young and old, I want to know how to have more meaningful prayer in my life. That's what their question is. I want to know how to have a more meaningful prayer, how to have that relationship, that connection. We are dealing with very busy lives, but prayer is foundational with our God, with our relationship with Him. The Bible contains many principles about prayer, lots of instructions. You know, Jesus Christ gave us the model prayer that outlines a method of how we can come to God. Gives us points, right? We don't just recite it. He doesn't like repetitious reiteration of things. He gives us this outline so we understand that everything comes from God. Right? Everything comes from God. That's how Jesus Christ lines that out and says, hey, here's a model that you can go by. And so I've made the title today, Closeness Through Prayer. Closeness Through Prayer. There's many other examples in the Bible with prayer. There's much more to it. We actually find many different types of prayer. We see prayers from kings, citizens, men, women, rich, poor, young, old, different phases of life. And in all of those prayers, we find different lessons, valuable pieces that we can pull out of it. And not just this human element, but this spiritual relationship that we have with our Creator, with our Father. We see all sorts of emotions. We see all sorts of thoughts that come with that. Sometimes it's anger, anguish. But it's oftentimes joy, rejoicing, happiness, peace. There's a lot that's in that. Now, if we take the book of Psalms, the book of Psalms is a whole bunch of psalms that are basically just prayers that are put to music. We see many different instances in the Bible. It's full of prayer. So today what I want to do, I want to walk through two different prayers that somebody gives to see what she says, why she says it, and then how God responds to it. If you would, you can go ahead and turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 2. It's 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 2. You know, God can have a positive or negative reaction or response to our prayers. And one of the hardest things to do is accepting when He says no. Or accepting when He waits to give an answer because He wants to give it a little bit of time. Because we always think that He has to give us the answer that we want. And we struggle with that. Internally, we struggle accepting that He doesn't always give us exactly what we want. If He says no, there's always a reason for it. And so I want to read a little bit of this backstory here to give a, kind of lay the foundation, read a chunk of the story so we understand what's going on here and read some of these details. Because this is coming at the end of the period of judges. And before Samuel's going to be this last judge before it kind of shifts into the kings ruling over Israel. And I want to walk through these two prayers because it's just magnificent. When we see the heart, we see the emotion, and we see the dedication that Hannah has to God. And so what we have here, we have a priest, Elkanah. He's a man of God. He has Hannah as a wife. But then in verse 2, we actually find out he has two wives. And there's a reason for that. If you look at 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 2, toward, it's the back half of it. It says, Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. So it looks as though Elkanah loved Hannah, but he also had a second wife because Hannah couldn't have children. This second wife is the one that produced him heirs, produced children. And then look at verse 3. It says, this man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Also the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. And whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah, he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. This is one of the most difficult faces human beings can face. It's devastating when you want to have children, you want to build a family, but you're incapable of it. You're just incapable of producing children. It's absolutely devastating for women who are in this state. It's just emotionally crushing, physically deteriorating of the will and spirit because God intended for women to reproduce, right? That was a job that God gave you. And women can feel like an absolute failure if they haven't accomplished that. And this is kind of what we find Hannah doing here. Her God-given job was to produce children, but she couldn't do that. She couldn't do that. What God created her for, she fell short. And we see that weigh on her. And she wanted to do that. She wanted to do that for Elkanah. She wanted to have her own children, but she didn't. So, in society at this point in time, it was even more of an issue because they placed value on women by how much they could reproduce, by the offspring that they had. And Hannah couldn't become a mother. God had closed her womb. So she felt like that failure. The weight was just all on her. If you look at verse 6, we're going to look at that because Peninnah actually held it over her. Both of them, it seems like, knew that Elkanah loved Hannah, but she couldn't have the kids. Elkanah didn't hide his love for Hannah. It seems like it was clear. But we find that Peninnah was her rival. All of the kids that she had, all those kids she was able to produce, she rubbed it in her face that she was more valuable. She could say, look at all the neighbors around. They know I'm more righteous. I'm able to produce children. I'm the better wife. I can do all of these things that you cannot do. And it seems like it was this struggle between the two. Could you imagine being in that? Being in a household day after day, not just dealing with her, but you actually see those children that you probably mothered. She probably mothered them to some degree. But she couldn't have her own. And then Peninnah is sitting there saying, I'm more righteous than you. Look how good I look compared to you. Hannah had to have lots of other things going on through her mind too. Her own weight. And in verse 6, it says, and her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. And so it was year by year when she went up to the house of the Lord that she provoked her. Therefore, she wept and did not eat. So not only is she in this sorrow, she's being antagonized by this woman that also lives in her household, who is some sort of baby factory. This is what she's dealing with day after day. And every time she comes before her going, guess what, I'm pregnant again. She just rubs it in, digs in even deeper, saying, I can do this and you cannot. Could you imagine the jealousy, the pain, the torment that Hannah had to go through for years. Years, this was what she lived in. And it says she got into such a depressed state that she actually stopped eating. She wouldn't eat. And look at verse 8. This is one of the most stupid and oblivious statements that a man can make, and I can see every single one of us doing it. Verse 8, it says, "Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, 'Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved?' And then he makes the statement, 'Am I not better than 10 sons? All you need is me, baby.'" He's like, "You got me. What else do you need?" He didn't get it, did he? I could see all of us there doing it. He's clueless and insensitive. It's just not connecting. He's got his children. He's got his second wife, but he loves Hannah, and he's going, why can't you just love me for this? In verse 9, it says, "So Hannah rose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord, and she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish." The description of her emotional state here is extremely detailed, talking about what she was actually feeling. When she went up to that tabernacle, what it was that was going on inside her heart and inside her mind through all of this. Tradition tells us that it was Samuel who actually wrote this, which makes sense because Samuel was her son. And what is happening? Mom's describing to him what she was going through, what she was feeling when she went through this. She must have detailed it for Samuel so that he understood what it was that she went through this process. And so we see this very personal and intimate feelings that she had because it was something that she passed down to her son as she's going through this anguish. And then we get to our first prayer here. Look at verse 11. Verse 11, it says, "Then she made a vow and said, 'O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life. No razor shall come upon his head.' And it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli watched her mouth." So she goes up to the tabernacle. She's praying. She's praying earnestly, just pouring out her soul to God to give her a child, to do the job that she was built for. And she says, "I'll dedicate him to you. I'll relinquish control to you. He's yours. Just let me bear this child." He says, "You can keep him here at the tabernacle, but let me get pregnant. Let me have him." And verse 13 says, "Now Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard, and therefore Eli thought she was drunk." Now Eli was the high priest at this time. This man of God looked at her and completely misjudges the whole situation. Verse 14 says, "So Eli said to her, 'How long will you be drunk? How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you.'" You talk about making a terrible situation and just adding gasoline to it. That's what just happened. Eli walked up and he just added fuel to the fire of all the torment that she was already going through. Everything Hannah was playing over in her mind, he just exacerbated all of it. And she's in prayer. She's pouring out her soul to God in agony and in torture. And she's crying. She's distraught. The man who's supposed to be the greatest man of God on the earth at that time accuses her of being drunk. He says, "Put away your wine. Put away your wine." Nobody would have blamed her at that point if she'd picked herself up and said, "God, I'm done with this. I'm done with you. I'm done with all of it. I'm out. I'm finished." I mean, she could have been the poster child for injustice at this point, right? She was doing the right thing, going to God, and she gets accused again. Accused by this righteous man. Could you imagine what was going through her mind? First, God doesn't allow her to have children. He puts the other woman that's in her life and lets her produce like crazy. The guy who's supposed to be righteous and a godly man accuses her of being drunk, falsely accusing her. Many people at this point would have taken a direction that they never could have come back from. They could have gone down a dark path that would have been very difficult to climb out of, buried themselves in a pit that would have been a huge feat to return from. But Hannah didn't do that. Hannah took a different path, and she stayed respectful, and she showed honor. She showed honor. Look at verse 15. He says, "But Hannah answered and said, 'No, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now.'" This word maidservant, so that we see, first she talks to God. Multiple times she says, "I'm your maidservant. This is just your maidservant here. Let me do this and I'll be your maidservant." This word for maidservant is a slave. It's a female slave that she's referring to herself as. She's saying, "I will be your servant." She comes to God and tells him that over and over again. And then she says the same thing here to Eli. "I'm just your slave. I'm just praying to God. Just pouring out my heart." This person who just falsely accused her, she turns to him and says, "I'm just your maidservant. I'm just connecting with God. I'm trying to have this closeness with God because I need help. I need His help." That was her character. That was her attitude through this whole thing. And Eli changed really quickly. He started listening. He was moved by what she said and he paid attention. Look at verse 17. He says, "Then Eli answered and said, 'Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him.' And she said, 'Let your maidservant find favor in your sight.' So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad." Eli says, "Go in peace. God's going to take care of you. God's going to take care of you. God's going to answer your prayer." Now, why did he respond that way? Why did he say that? He saw her heart. He saw her attitude, her character. She could have very easily turned and said, "Excuse me? Are you talking to me? I'm not drunk. Do you know what my life is like? Do you know what God has done to me? Do you know the turmoil I'm in and day out?" But she didn't. She goes, "I'm just your slave. I'm here as your slave and God's slave. As your servant, your maidservant. I'm here to have a relationship with God." And it was because of her attitude that Eli says, "You know what you're doing. You know what you're doing." She was laying it all out for God, asking for His intervention. She walked away not sad anymore. It says her face changed. She was no longer sad. There was a peace that she was given just by talking to God. That prayer to God. Look at verse 19. It says, "Then they arose early in the morning and worshipped before the Lord, returned and came to the house at Ramah, and Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And so it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, and called his name Samuel, saying, 'Because I have asked for him from the Lord.'" Samuel literally means God has heard. God has heard. So God heard her. God answered her prayer. God answered this remarkable prayer. And she delivered this prayer in some of the most stressful circumstances imaginable. And God answered that for her. He fixed her problem. Now, 1 Samuel, the main character through most of 1 Samuel is Samuel. It talks about Samuel. But these first two chapters, chapters 1 and 2, are heavily focused on his mother, on Hannah. And what it was that she did, her attitude and her character through this whole process. And these two prayers that she has, that she gives to God, that she says to God. The other one is in chapter 2. But it still has all to do with her interaction with God. This process that God's walking her through. All of these things, it exposes the type of person that she is. It exposes her true feelings, her true mindset. It shows us who she was as a person. You can go ahead and flip over a chapter. You may not even have to turn a page, depending on how your Bibles separate out. But what we find is Samuel is born, and every year Elkanah goes up to the tabernacle and he says, "Hey, you want to come again?" And she goes, "Not yet." She goes, "It's not time yet." She goes, "Hang on." She says, "When he's old enough, I'll take him because I have to give him to the Lord." Now, Elkanah's response here is pretty amazing, but he goes, all right, you know best. You know best. I know with our children, you know, when you have a child, you love them so much, you want to show them off. You want to say, "Look what I got." Because everybody loves baby snuggles. Very, very seldom do you find somebody who's like, "Nah, I don't want to touch them." Most people are like, "Yeah, I want to snuggle a baby." There's something exciting about that. For me, this thought of not having my baby shown, I forced my wife to go back to church much earlier than I ever should have, with all four of them. Unfortunately for her, it wasn't until after we had all four and we're done having kids that I finally figured it out. But I just wanted to show them off. I couldn't imagine the thought of going to church and saying, "Somebody else take my baby." But Elkanah knew what this process was. He knew what was going to happen. He goes, "Whatever you need to do, you do. Whatever it is that you have done with God," he goes, "Okay, I trust you." This woman that he loves, who he finally had a child with, they were going to give that child away. And so this is where we find ourselves here. And so it was after, it looks like somewhere between him turning 2 and 3 years of age, society at that time, it looks like it was somewhere between the second and third year that they started weaning the babies. It was at that point is when she took him to the tabernacle. She took him to fulfill her side of the deal, her commitment. And she goes to the tabernacle and she leaves her baby with Eli. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 2 verse 18. It says, "But Samuel ministered before the Lord, even as a child, wearing a linen ephod." Would you imagine this little guy, 3, 4 years old, wearing this little ephod? Every year he'd come up and he's helping at the priests. He's doing his little jobs, dressed like them, trying to act like them. He's doing what he can. This is the environment that he's raised in. This is his world. And in verse 19, it says, "Moreover, his mother used to make him a little robe and bring it to him year by year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, 'The Lord give you descendants from this woman for the loan that was given to the Lord.' Then they would go to their home." So it's kind of this little ceremony that would happen. All the people saw Samuel's parents blessed, given this special blessing because of the gift of Samuel. Because of Samuel himself. And in verse 21 it says, "And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bore 3 sons and 2 daughters. Meanwhile, the child Samuel grew before the Lord." Now this is a point in the story where it starts to shift more about Samuel. His mother took him to this point. Then they give him to God. And God continues to bless her with children. That wasn't the extent of her fertility. Now, I would imagine that Peninnah at this point was no longer producing, and kind of the tables had flipped, right? They changed. This teaches us a valuable lesson, though, about children and us, every single one of us. She turned her child back over to God. We all belong to God. All of us, every single one of us are a child of God. We belong to Him. We belong to the Father. And so we have this story. We learn these lessons from these prayers. There's three things that I want you to take note of that we've gone over. Number one, when you're feeling crushed by what seems unfair and an unjust situation or circumstance, respond with a humble attitude towards God. When feeling crushed by what seems to be unfair or unjust situations, respond with a humble attitude towards God. Now, this isn't normal, is it? This isn't what our automatic go-to as human beings is. When something happens that's unjust or unfair, we make a big, bold claim and let everybody know that we were just wronged, right? We don't let that just slide by. We don't keep our mouth shut. We go, hey, this isn't right. You can't do this to me. Can you look what they did to me? Can you believe that? We make a big deal about it. We announce it to everybody. That wasn't Hannah's approach. She didn't make it verbal. That's why Eli got confused when there were no words coming out of her mouth, because she was praying to God. She kept her story between her and God. And he said, I need you to fix this, Lord. I want this relationship. I want this closeness with you. I want you to see how vulnerable I am right now. I don't need anybody else to know. I need you to know. She went before God with humility, with humble worship. Even in her despair, she doesn't blame God. She doesn't blame Eli. She doesn't even blame Peninnah. She just pours out her heart towards God and says, I'm your maidservant. I'm your slave. I'm your daughter. And I know you can fix this. I know you can fix this. Her whole attitude was worship of God. Worship of the Creator. And unjust and unfair things happen every single day, all around the world, multiple times to people. Constantly. I can guarantee it. At this very second, somebody is being treated unfairly or unjustly. It just happens. It's the world that we live in. It's the things that we go through. Many people have been destroyed by it. Many people have left religion by it. Many people have left our church because of it. Because they were treated unfairly or unjustly. It's the reality of what we live in. And sometimes it eats at people slowly, and sometimes it's an immediate reaction. They go, I'm out. I'm done. I don't have to put up with this. You're nobody. You mean nothing. And they're gone. And that's the end of their relationships. They cut everybody off and cut everybody out. Hannah showed us something different. Hannah showed us something completely different. She set a different tone for us, a different understanding of what is a close relationship with God, how we have that through prayer. In probably the midst of her hardest, her biggest hardship, she still had that relationship. On top of everything else, Eli accusing her, a baby factory rubbing it in her face, Eli not understanding what she's going through, going, you got me. She acted correctly. She had the right attitude. Where most of us probably would have got up and left. We'd have been gone. It's hard to work through those things. It's hard to talk those out. Because when we get that angry, sometimes we couldn't even talk to Eli at that point, right? We would have been so infuriated of the accusation that we wouldn't have even been able to discuss it. We would have just left. She had such a humble sense of worship for God. That was her motivation. That was her motivation for this whole thing. Her attitude. No matter what this circumstance was that she found herself in, she knew what was valuable. She knew what this prayer between her and her father meant. What God could do. If we're not careful, if we let these injustices weigh on us, we can let them break us in two. It will break us in two. You know, the weight will cause us to emotionally destroy ourselves. If we let it. Because we try to carry it, and we just keep carrying it, and it gets heavier and heavier and heavier, and then we finally break at some point. We finally break. And we get bitter, and we get emotional, We get angry. And we put up a wall between us and God and us and those who actually love us and care for us. We separate ourselves. We distance ourselves from God, who can actually fix all of it. We put up that wall. And that's where we end up. And what we end up getting to is we start to actually blame God. We say, it's your fault. It's your fault I'm in this. It's your fault that I'm dealing with these bad things. You're the reason for all my troubles. Hannah could have walked away and said, God, you closed my womb. Why? I can't stand you. I hate you. I'm done. I'm done. And walked away. We all have dealt with certain situations, whether it's the loss of a job, it's when we become sick. If we think, God, I want my spouse to treat me differently. This isn't how I should be treated. This isn't how I want them to act. There's a lot of things that go through our mind. I don't make enough money. I can't pay all of my bills. There's lots of things that we could turn on God. And that's what we do. If we get into those depressed, dark states, we start to pinpoint it. And we say, this is not fair. I don't deserve this. And we let that bitterness just resonate. And when we let it resonate, it just grows. And it feeds on that bitterness. And we become spiteful and hateful and angry. And it just keeps growing. Turn over to Luke chapter 18 and verse 2. There's a parable here that I want to take a look at. In and of itself, it doesn't make much sense. But keep in mind here Hannah's whole attitude, her personality that we've just read through, this heart that she has had. It's Luke chapter 18, starting in verse 2. Says, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. Verse 3, now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary. So we have this widow. We're not given too much of her backstory, but she has no influence in society. She doesn't seem like there's really much of importance to her, but to some degree she's being oppressed. In some degree we see either her rights are being taken away, somebody's doing something against her, may actually even be hurting her. We aren't given all the details, but she has no other solutions. She has nobody to protect her. This widow goes to this judge, and it's this unjust judge, because a good judge would have actually listened to her, heard her story, and ended up siding with her. But what we find here in verse 4 says, and he would not for a while, but afterwards he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. Now the disciples at this point were a little confused. They were trying to figure out if they were comparing God to this unjust judge. They're trying to figure out who the hero in this story is. They're going, what's the point? What point are you trying to make with this? We don't understand. What is the focus that we're supposed to zero in on here? What are we supposed to learn? Go back to verse 1. Verse 1 says, then he spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. He spoke a parable to them that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. The whole point is to keep praying. Keep praying. In the parable, this widow just keeps coming back. She's annoying the snot out of this guy. This judge who couldn't care less about her, he finally goes, okay, all right, just to get you out of here and never see you again, I'll resolve this. I'll finally listen to you. I'll take care of it. So does that mean we badger God until he gives us the answer that we want? No. No. He's telling us he wants this relationship. He wants this closeness with us through prayer. He wants us to pray to him. to have a relationship with him. She keeps pestering him. We're never a pester to God. We don't ever bother God. He hopes that we continually keep coming to him, that we keep asking for his guidance, his inspiration, his lead in our lives, that he's opening the doors. Now, there's a point where we can keep asking for the same thing over and over again, and we've probably gotten like 30 different answers in ways that he's shown us, nope, this is where you're going. We're going, I want this. I want this. And we're not paying attention to anything else. There's a joke about a flood happening and a guy on the roof. I don't know if you've ever heard that, where sends like a boat, sends something else, sends multiple things, and every time the person on the roof goes, ah, God will take care of me. And then when they end up getting to heaven, he goes, why didn't you take any of the things I gave you? I go, I was waiting on you. He goes, I sent all of these things to help you. God opens doors for us, but sometimes we've got the blinders on where we're looking at, this is exactly what I want and where I want to go. I'm not paying anything else. No attention anywhere else, God. Give me this. And he's going, that's not best. It may be the easiest, but he goes, that's not best. That's not where I want you to go. That's not the lesson I want you to learn. That's not the path I want you to walk. We have to go, okay. All right. We want to go to God because he wants us to come to him. And drop back down to verse 6 where we stopped and skipped over. Verse 6 and 7 says, then the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. And shall God not avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? God doesn't always respond in the time frame that we think he should, in the methods that we think he should. I'll tell you, every single time I anoint somebody, I sit there thinking, God, you need to fix them right now. We're following your process. We're doing what you want us to do, what you've told us, the instructions in the Bible that you've laid out, said this is how we anoint people. These people want healing. Fix them now. And we get up off our knees and they're usually not fixed. The reality of it is they're usually not fixed right away. And a couple days later, I try to call and check up and see, and oftentimes still not fixed. I'm going, God, come on. Do your thing. But he's got a different plan. He's got a different plan. He says, be patient. Be patient. I'm working with this. He goes, I've got it. Maybe not how you think it's going to work out, but I've got this. I've got this. God will intervene. There's no question about it. He will intervene. And sometimes we have to wait. Sometimes we have to wait longer than we want. And then he says, sometimes we have to wait until the return of Jesus Christ. And he says, that's when it'll get fixed. Sometimes that's the end. It is the return of Jesus Christ fixes it. And that one's really hard. Because that's not the answer that any of us want. Because we want it now in our lifetime. But he says, be patient. Our job is to have the attitude of Hannah. To keep coming back to God. Remember that we come to him as his servant. We are here as his children. We are his children. We are sons and daughters of the Almighty God. And he wants us to have this closeness. He wants this relationship. He wants us to come into his presence. He wants us to break ourselves down for him. Open ourselves up. That's what Hannah did when she went to the tabernacle. That's why he said, God grant you this. He realized what he'd stepped into. And he goes, I see you. And he goes, I hope God grants this for you. I hope God that gives you this. And he's asking, he says, God, give her this. Because this is the right attitude. And she went away. She didn't know if she was going to have a child or not. But she changed. She got rid of the sadness, the depression. She says she was no longer sad. And she picked herself up and she goes, I feel the connection. I feel this closeness. Sometimes when we ask God for things, the trials don't just magically go away. They still linger. Sometimes we're still hurt by them. And for Hannah, yeah, she went home to the same rival who probably immediately started rubbing it in her face again. She was living in that same environment. But she had the same attitude that she had when she was in that relationship with God, that closeness with God. That's what she did. It wasn't easy for her. But God will fix every injustice and every unright thing that happens. He wants to do that and He's going to do that. He doesn't want us to get bitter though. No matter how long it takes, we can't turn against God. We can't break that relationship. And then verse 8, it says, I tell you that He will avenge them speedily. He will avenge them speedily. God will bring about justice. Now, when we think about it over the span of human history, how that all happens when with Christ's return, it's rather quickly. It's a short period of time. We think and look at this little compact piece of time that we exist in. It's tiny. He says it'll avenge them speedily. It says, nevertheless, the Son of Man comes. Will He find faith on the earth? He says, what are you going to do in the meantime? What are you going to do while I'm working out my plan? Are you going to get ready? Among all this unfairness and injustice, He goes, what are you going to do? Am I going to find anybody who still has the faith? He goes, I'm going to take care of things. But do we open ourselves up with a different attitude, with a different direction of what we're supposed to do and who we're supposed to become? Do we go to God in prayer and say, I'm your servant. Show me what you want me to do. Show me what you want me to do. Hey, many times He already has. We have a pretty good understanding of what our job is here on earth. Now, the day-to-day is a little different. Each of us have a slightly different path. But we know where we're going. We know what our job is. Point number 2 is stay focused on God, His ways, His promises, and not the unfairnesses and injustices. Stay focused on God, His ways, His promises, and not the injustice or unfairness. You know, we have to be going to God all the time. There's no way to have a relationship with God unless we're going before Him in prayer. To have that close relationship. He wants us to petition Him. He wants us to come to Him. He wants to draw us in. And at those times, there may be times we go, God, this isn't fair. I don't understand this. This isn't right. Why am I going through this? It's okay. He wants to know what we're feeling. He wants us to express our emotions. And He wants us to talk to Him about it. And it's in those vulnerable states that sometimes He opens us up and opens the doors so that we can start to understand what we see where we're supposed to go. And sometimes we do a better job of seeing God's response at that point. But that means we have to focus on God, on His ways and His plan. That's all what this relationship is. Knowing who He is, knowing what He wants from us, and knowing where He's taking us. That's our job. That's where we put our energy. That's our primary focus in life. It's really easy to put our energy into the bad feelings, the hurts and the pains, the bad situations and saying this isn't fair. And when we do that, guess what? We start to rationalize and we start to justify what our actions are, what we say, and what we do. And we say this is okay. And when we put our energy in that negative stuff, that's where we go. That's where we go. It'll be exactly what we think and how we act and how we feel. Flip back over to 1 Samuel 1, verse 17 again. We're going to reread just a couple of these and then jump down to some extra here in a minute. But 1 Samuel 1, verse 17, it's this uncommon approach to life that Hannah takes. And she knows God loves her. She knows that He's the maker. She knows all the things that we do. And she has that a different attitude. She understands His greatness. The greatness in His ways, the greatness in who He is. And her mindset's different. It's different than everybody else around her. We can feel different. We can act different. We can be different than the rest of the world. It's life-changing. Well, if you focus on negative things, you're going to feel bad. If you focus on good things, you're going to be happy. This isn't special knowledge. You talk to psychologists. Psychologists will tell you this. Yeah, if you focus on the bad things, this is where you're going to gravitate towards. If you focus on better things, people tend to go that direction. It's not anything unheard of. Hannah's showing us how to do that. She lived it. She breathed it. And in all of Hannah's anguish, she never gave up on God. Her situation had gone on for years. It doesn't tell us exactly how long, but it was years because Peninnah kept having babies. There's a period of time that it takes to incubate a baby and then produce a baby and then to do it again and again. So we know it was some length of time that she went through this. And year after year, she went up to the Lord, and then finally it's recorded what that prayer is. Who knows how many times she asked for that? I would just about guarantee she said a similar prayer to that every single year that she went up there. I would imagine. And it was this time finally that he goes, now is the time. Now is the time. Look at verse 17 again of 1 Samuel 1. It says, then Eli answered and said, go in peace, and God of Israel grant you petition which you have asked. In verse 18, and she said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went away and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Remember, she got out of this depressed state. This depressed state where she couldn't eat, she changed. She found comfort in God. The lowest of low, in that closeness that she had in that prayer, God drew her in. She changed. She went away even better than she was before. There's no amount of oppression or false accusations that would keep her from her God and having the right relationship with Him. She went home and continued to do the same thing she'd done year after year, having the right attitude and right mind. And God finally gave her what she asked for. He's the source of comfort. God isn't this magic genie that just produces wishes that we ask on every command. His answers are based on what is best for us to get us where He wants us to go. And that means sometimes we don't even know what it is that we really need to ask for. But He's taken us to a specific spot. And thankfully for Hannah at this point, the answer was yes. That makes God's answers a whole lot easier to swallow when it lines up with what we want. We say, God, please let me get this job. I interviewed well. It pays well. I think this is a good fit for me. We get the job. We go, thanks, God. Whew, that's great. And there's other people I know who've gone through 10, 15, 20 different interviews, and they just keep striking out. They keep a good attitude about it. I don't know that I could. But that's what He wants, and that's what she did. And she did that under the context that she made a commitment with God. She told God that she would do something. And that's point number three. To receive God's full blessings in our lives, we must stay dedicated to the commitments we make. To receive God's full blessing in our lives, we must stay dedicated to the commitments we make. Now, I don't want this to sound like we go around bargaining with God with everything we have, right? God, give me this and I'll do this. God, you make this happen, I'll do this. That's not what I'm saying. There are very few instances in the Bible where that worked out for the benefit and good of people. The ones who negotiated with God usually didn't end up on the right side of things. That's not what I'm saying. When we do make a commitment, which many of us have, We've committed as we went through the baptismal process and had the laying on of hands and received God's Holy Spirit. We've made a commitment to God that says, I will live according to your laws. I will live according to your statutes. I will love everybody the way that you love me. Some of us have made other commitments to God. We have to stick to those commitments. We have to be really careful with what we do. Whether or not God gave Hannah a son, she was going to go back home and she's going to go through that year the same way that she had been living, with the same attitude and the same mindset. She was open and honest with God and said, you know, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm doing. She gave her request to God, and he fulfilled it. And then she spent 3 years, 3 years raising that child, knowing that she was going to have to turn him over. Knowing that she was going to give him up. Could you imagine the internal struggle? I would be thinking every day, all right, now's the day I leave. Now's the day I run. Right? This is my baby. Couldn't imagine giving him up. But all the turmoil and all the agony that she went through, it wasn't about giving up Samuel. It was about the life that she had before. The life after was much better. She loved that. She carried out her commitment. She carried out her commitment. She never stopped. She never stopped remembering what it was that she was going to do. When Elkanah walked back to that tabernacle year after year, and he asked, hey, you going with me? She's going, nope, this is not the year. This isn't the time yet. But I'll let you know when it's ready. And she spent that time considering, and I don't even know what all the feelings were that she was going through, but I know it had to be tremendous. But she didn't get bitter. She didn't get angry. She didn't try to find a way to escape what she had to do, the reality of her situation. She knew she had to fulfill her promise. Drop down to verse 24 of chapter 1. Because God expected her to fulfill this. Now we can sometimes sit here and think, well, that's unfair. Why would God hold her to this? Why would he not allow Hannah to keep Samuel after the prayer that she had, after the attitudes that she's shown, the dedication? Why wouldn't God? That's just unfair, God. No. That's not unfair. She's fulfilling her commitment. That's fair and just. She asked for a child, said, I'd give him over to do your work. And he did it. He goes, okay, here's your child. And she goes, okay. You know, for us who are married, our marriage vow is that same way. God is at the core, the center of our marriage covenant. Right? We make a covenant with each other, but God is that base. We're both making that covenant with God also, saying, God, I'm going to make this marriage work. No matter what, no matter what, how difficult it comes, you're at the core of this, and I will make this work. I'll fight for this. Any vow that we make is like this. Look at verse 24. It says, now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bulls, one ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli, and he said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. So she's saying, hey, do you remember me? I was the one that you thought was drunk. Verse 27 says, for this child I prayed, and the Lord had granted me my petition, which I had asked of him. Therefore I have also lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. So they worshipped the true Lord there. She's not in any type of anguish or despair as she's bringing Samuel up here to the tabernacle. We don't see that attitude in her. What we get into now is chapter 2, verses 1 through 10, or this second prayer. This second prayer that she gives that's actually recorded for us, it's when she's fulfilling her commitment at the tabernacle and giving her son over to Eli to do his work. And we think, man, she must have been so sad. She must have been broken up about this. That's not what we find. That's not the attitude that she had. Look at chapter 2 and verse 1. It says, and Hannah prayed and said, my heart rejoices in the Lord. She's actually excited. She's excited. She goes, my child gets to do this. And she thinks about that time where God gave her that child. That child wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for God. She goes, I'm happy that I have him. I'm happy that he was born. I'm happy with the time that I've been able to have with him. Here, I'm fulfilling my commitment. I'm doing my part, Lord, just as you asked. She's rejoicing as she's carrying out her part. This relationship that she has with God, she's not claiming mistreatment or unfairness. What she went through may have been unfair. All those years. This wasn't unfair. She didn't view that as unfair. She was excited and she kept true to her word. She did what she was supposed to. And it says, my horn is exalted in the Lord. I smile at my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. She kind of gets a slight jab in here. The smile says it all. She had gotten an answered prayer. She watched God do a miracle in her life. For years, she was barren, and God gave her a son. And we see that he actually gave her several more after that. But she was happy to be a servant. She was happy to be that daughter. She was ready to fulfill that commitment. And verse 2 says, no one is holy like the Lord. There is none beside you, nor there any rock like our God. You know, the rest of this prayer is just praising God, telling him how wonderful he is. Thank you, God. You're great. All of these great things that he is and that he does. And she just pours out all of these praises to him. She says, I can't believe how awesome you are. And it's recorded for us. These are the two prayers that she's given that we get to read. She's so thankful for God carrying out the blessing and then she being able to carry out her commitment because that meant she had a son. Hannah understood God on a whole different level. I mean, she already seemed pretty good. And I don't know how many of us would have handled it the same if we went through our life dealing with what she dealt with. She handled it like a champ. And she continued to respond to God in prayer, in that closeness, the rest of her life, it seems like. Her petition, God extended grace to that. He blessed her with a child. She was excited and she was joyful to carry out her part of that. There's times in life where even little things, whether it's us trying to eat healthier or lose a little bit of weight or getting down on our hands and knees more to pray. We make lots of commitments that we have to be really careful that we don't just skim by. That we're not just making them frivolously. When we pray and when we talk to God and tell Him that we're going to do something, we need to hold up and carry out our part of it. There's a lot to what God wants in our relationship. But we have to be praying to have that relationship. That's how He draws us in. That's how we become close with God. Don't look at the things of what we think we're missing out on or the fun that we think we have or that we just get disgruntled because we don't think we're seeing any results. Have that relationship with God and know that He will work it out in the right time. Now, whatever our rationalization is for acting the way we do, push all of that aside. Act like Hannah did and know that God is in control. Know that God can do it when He sees fit. We're given this story in the Bible as a wonderful example of prayer. Of prayer, of an answered prayer. Of what it means to pray diligently. What it means to have a relationship with God. And there's a whole lot more stuff in this section, these two chapters right here, than just what we've gone over today. And it's packed full. And it's here for a reason. To help us to understand God a whole lot better. You know, we see the human side of Hannah and what she went through. We see the lessons that she learned. And hopefully we're gleaning a whole lot of lessons out of it too. Without having to go through some of the things that she did. And next time you come before God in prayer, let Him in. Turn over the reins and follow through.